You can think and say all the right things, but if your head goes this way and your habits go that way, your heart will always follow the habits.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Let's Be Real podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Eunice, and I believe we need all the help we can get when it comes to living a full and free life. Here you'll find honest truth, practical tips, and perspective changes that help you embrace the miracle that is your life. It's an in-process conversation that's going to be unfiltered, and it better be fun. Let's get real together.
Well, you guys, welcome to Let's Be Real. This is our fourth season, and this is our first live in-person interview. Justin Early is here with me.
I get to be the first live in-person in a long time.
Season, yes. In a long time. That hasn't taken place in like a back spare room of my home with like only my closest friends, you know. So we are here at the Common House in Richmond, Virginia, and this is the podcast studio that we get to use here, which is incredible. And I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Guys, if you don't know who Justin Early is, he is a lawyer, an author, and a speaker, and he's from Richmond, Virginia, right here. He is also a very esteemed man of education. He went to UVA, which I hold personal offense against you for that. But then you also went to Georgetown for law school. So I want to ask you a couple of questions about those years in your life, because
that's a lot of education.
Yeah. So I want to know, what's the most interesting class you took in undergraduate or graduate school, like when you look back?
I immediately know the answer to both of those.
Okay, good.
And both of them are in literature. So I took a class taught by this epic professor. He was legendary, named Bill Wilson at UVA. Some people listening who went to UVA might know him. And it was called, I think it was called Grace in Literature.
Okay.
And he went through authors from like Dante and Augustine all the way to like Flannery O'Connor and Faulkner, and showed the way that different writers understood themes of grace.
Oh, wow.
So it was not at all like a Christian literature class, but it was the first time it opened my eyes up that to this whole world of that I could learn about grace and who God is from unsuspecting places.
Oh, man.
And it just completely changed me.
Do you think that he was a believer?
I think that he was.
Uh-huh.
But all kinds of people were in that class.
Yeah.
It just felt like a literature class. But just on like, you know, you might have like literature and gender, literature and, you know, the 18th century England. And this was like literature and grace.
Yeah.
And it totally worked.
Oh, man.
And then similarly, my best class in law school was law and literature.
Yeah.
And we read novels about.
Oh, interesting.
But not like John Grisham novels. We just read novels about kind of ethical situations. Like The Reader was one of the novels. We read this. I won't go into all of them, but. I find when I'm learning from fiction writers, I'm like my heart is the most engaged, which is interesting.
Oh man, I am a huge fan. I was just talking with a client about like the purpose of fiction
in
life, like, and I think she needed permission to use fiction as a way to learn. Like, it's okay to like relax and be in fiction with and just what you can learn about the Lord.
I'm acting surprised, but I think that's what that class did for me.
Yeah,
It changed the idea that nonfiction is where you learn and fiction is where you escape to realize, no. I actually just read a fascinating line.
I was just going to ask you if you've read any good fiction recently.
I have. I just finished the novel Crossroads by Jonathan Franzen.
Okay.
Which, this is way too big of a tangent, so I'm not going to go there. But he's a contemporary writer who is really famous, was good friends with David Foster Wallace.
Okay.
But his most recent novel is about a church youth group in the 70s.
Okay, dokie.
Super interesting.
Okay.
Lots of people coming to Jesus while high. It's interesting.
You're like, here's the plot line from the back of the book.
Yeah. But more importantly, I just read a quote by, I think his name's Malcolm Gutier. I can't remember. But he said, the poets, something like, it was like, the poets need the theologians and the theologians need the poets. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, I think the well-rounded believer is moving back and forth between story and nonfiction and understands that you can't really understand the world and God without both.
Right. Yeah. I've often quoted Ian Cron. I saw him at a he's the Enneagram guy, you guys, if you don't know who I'm talking about. And you know we talk about the Enneagram, and I always tell you guys, I'm not going to go into it because you can just go listen to Ian Cron's just to get more like knowledge. But he said that artists come through the side door of the soul, like preachers come through the front door. And I was at a creative conference time, and I was like, that is so true.
Yeah.
And I use that line a lot to talk about when you're trying to go deeper in your life. a lot of times we do need the side door. Why do we love music great TV shows? I mean, and it's grace and literature and finding redemptive. I mean, it's incredible.
As a four, I've really
are you a four?
This. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Strong three wing.
Okay. See, I'm a three with a very strong four wing. So that's why we were matching outfits. Yeah. No. I mean, I feel all of that, and even I just feel like, no matter where, we're going to be talking in a minute about your book, Habits of the Household. And it's interesting because you have four young boys, right?
Yeah.
How and what does young mean? What's the range of ages?
9, 7, 4, and 3.
I mean, is someone always moving around your house? Yeah.
Yes. Add anything to the end of is someone always. Unless it's like being nice or saying please. Yeah, someone is always
quietly doing a craft.
Wrestling, running around naked, breaking something, throwing something. Last night at dinner, I dismiss our youngest Shepherd to go play because he's barely three. And so it's like he can only take so much dinner conversation. Yeah. The others are doing pretty good at like actually sitting at the table and talking. And I notice out of the corner of my eye, he walks back into the room. He has boxing gloves on. And he just slugged, before I can say stop, he slugs Lauren, like, right in the side. And I just felt so bad for her because she was like, ow, like, why'd you do that? And he was just, like, thrilled that he had found boxing gloves.
He was like, because I found these gloves.
So getting punched at dinner is not unusual.
That's standard. Yeah.
So,
mine are 19, 17, and 14, but two boys, two boy dogs, and a husband. So, like, I have a male... and then Cameron and I are holding down the fort.
I was gonna say, how's your daughter?
She's amazing because she's incredible at being a peacekeeper. But yes, one thing I always felt raising boys is like someone is always just like having to move like a lot of body parts around and like
it's
knock something, hit something, jump on something, just in general.
And it's, I mean, I often wish we had a girl in the crew to bring that balance.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, you know, I do love the life that the Lord has given us. Like when I came home from traveling last night, literally the first thing we did is like drop the bags, like that's the rug, we're all wrestling. And it was great. And it's just the way Lauren like has started to realize what I could never articulate, but just intuited from being a guy. Like that's just that physical roughhousing is often like the best way we can show love.
Yeah, love and connection and all that. Yeah. I mean, that's a whole nother podcast to talk about.
Well, that would
I
be
mean,
fun, though.
Immediately, I'm like, boys and education. And like, I love my boys. I love raising boys. Yes, and they are very different. So, but
I mean, this, like, maybe you're doing this on purpose. It segues a little bit because it was partly the wildness of the family that continued to stir up my anger, that continued to make me realize I need
help
to work on my habits of an household.
Well, let's back up a little bit from there and get into some of that. And talk to me about, like, you are, like, obsessed with habits.
A little bit.
How did you get there? And why are they so important? And then we'll make the segue into, like, this concept of, like, spiritual habits.
Yeah.
So.
I like how you asked that. Because a lot of my old friends who knew me in college, for example, would not understand why I'm so obsessed with habits now, because they knew me as that like four kind of out there drummer, like guitar player. I was just very artistic, very elastic in my life. So when I transitioned from being a missionary in China, which was the first 4 or 5 years after college.
Do you guys like how he threw that in there? He's like, I'm also fluent in Mandarin.
Yeah. No, I'm really rusty right now.
Okay, but you did. So you left school. Went on this big journey.
After graduating from college, I did almost 5 years of missions in China.
Okay.
My wife and I were married, so we were there together. And then I had this calling experience, another subject of a different podcast, but I had this calling experience where I felt the Lord telling me to go back to the States to work missionally within law and business. Okay.
Did you have any aspirations of law school before that time?
No. It was on my radar because my dad was a lawyer. Okay. And I was always interested in politics and law and policy, but I did not want to be a lawyer.
Okay.
In fact, I was tinkering with seminary classes. I was tinkering with doing an MFA, and I was doing a lot of poetry writing at the time. Like, I was thinking about that. So this was truly kind of like a Lord intervening through. I witnessed a political protester being arrested is the short version, and sort of started to realize how much the top-down influence matters in our lives, how much the way that law and economics is set up matters. And so I was just inspired, and I thought, oh, I want to be a part of that and bringing the gospel to bear on those things. So what happened, though, is I went at law school and lawyering with all the fervor of a man on a call.
Mm-hmm.
and which was good in that like I graduated with really good grades and got an awesome job. But what I didn't think about, and I should have as a missionary, because a missionary knows you can't assimilate to the culture you go to. You have to live differently than it. You know, you're inviting people to a third culture, not yours, not theirs, but the gospel. But I didn't think about that in law school. And law school is a formation machine.
Yeah.
Like they have a way they want you to act, think, you know, they didn't say it like that, but there's all these habits that you assimilate to.
Okay.
Staying up later, waking up earlier, always adding more to your resume, always being tethered to your phone, busyness being a badge of honor. It's not super different than the rest of modern America. Mm-hmm. It's just probably on crack.
Yeah, and it's like a concentrated time, you know, for that.
And you're in the ring. So, you know, I was spit out the other side, and again, I did well, but I had never thought about how you know, the house of my life was sincerely decorated with this Christian content, and I meant it all. But the architecture of my habits were just like everybody else's. And what happened to me is what happens to tons of other lawyers, and that is like I had a complete meltdown, anxiety crash. Lawyers burn out. Americans burn out. Like, this is, again, this is not unusual, right?
Right.
This is pretty typical. So I always tell people my story might be extreme, but it's not unusual. in my first year of lawyering, really, really crashed. Insomnia, panic attacks, even suicidal thoughts. Some of that was because of taking bad medications that were trying to help, but some of it was, I now look back, and I didn't have the words for it then, but I look back with hindsight and see that my body and my heart and head were converted to these habits of anxiety and busyness that my life routines worshipped. And it was in my process of getting better that I started to realize, wait, there is really something here. You can think and say all the right things, but if your head goes this way and your habits go that way, your heart will always follow the habits. And that was the big light bulb insight for me that came after years of trying to think and put my life back together.
Okay.
But that's when I really started getting interested in writing about this stuff. And that's what the first book, The Common Rule, was born out of.
Oh, man. What an incredible story. And a great time for it, because we're all kind of, I mean, let's be honest, we're all kind of self-centered. We perceive the world through our own self-focus. And so we're at a time now where we're almost at like a collective cultural burnout.
Yeah.
And I think that people who have done pretty well in life, they would listen to a story like that and be like, oh, that's not about me. But now I actually think that the collective cultural burnout has allowed even people who maybe are pretty steady and pretty happy-go-lucky to be like, this isn't working for me.
It's not. Yeah, it's just not unusual. Yeah. I was at a college conference about a year and a half ago. It was just before the pandemic started. And I was doing a seminar, and there was just bajillion other seminars. And I was like, how do I get people to come to mine? I titled it How Not to Have a Mental Breakdown.
Okay, nice. It worked.
There was not a seat. It was totally packed out. People were sitting on the floor all around the room. Just the idea of speaking like, here's how to not fall apart mentally. Everybody was like, I need to know that. Which, you know, I'm happy people want to think about and talk about this stuff, but I'm also sad that the mental and is so endemic.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're giving us like a really practical, like this is a practical way in, because I think the whole concept can feel really overwhelming. And if all you feel is weary and all you feel is tired or all you feel is burned out, we don't know how to like get back from whatever's going on. But habits are like an external sign of an inward reality. So that's actually something that you can jump onto.
And I mean, far from being discouraging to me, it was, or overwhelming or burdensome, it was actually great news, because I, and probably a lot of other listeners, you can get to a place where you're wondering, why do I feel the way that I do? I think that I'm believing all the right things.
Right.
I thought that I was doing all the things, but I feel like I'm falling apart inside.
Yeah.
And so to me, it was actually great news that there is a lever to pull, that there are things that you can do to, A, change your mental health, but B, that there's, I think of it now as like, it's, we're in like the sanctification realm. And I learned so much about the gospel and grace, and I'm grateful for it, of salvation.
Yeah.
That God loves us no matter what good or what bad things we do, which is wonderful. And the only thing is that I never had thought about, oh, because of that, there are things that we now can and ought to do. And habits were like, is that path that you can walk down to say, how do I cooperate with Jesus as he tries to change my life. Mm. And that idea that you really can change, even from the midst of your mental crisis, the Lord is with you and wants to change you, that was music to my ears.
Mm, that is that is really good news.
And I never want that to happen again, but I look back and I'm like, it's the best thing that ever happened to
me. Yeah, yeah.
And the worst thing.
Oh, man. So somewhere along that process in the years, of course, we're talking about years. It's not like you just realized all this stuff at once. This first book came out of that experience, The Common Rule. And you talk in there about several different patterns, habits that you can take on. I'm curious, what is one of those habits that you're practicing currently that's really making it
so difference? I still do all of them. Except I have trouble with the weekly fast one.
Okay.
I haven't been fasting in a couple months, and that one's a hard one for me. But the ones that really make the difference for me are the micro daily habits of scripture before phone and kneeling prayer 3 times a day.
Okay.
They're just autopilot things that I do every day that keep me in rhythms of scripture and prayer. Mm-hmm. And for my, not just a little bit complicated life with the 4 boys and lawyering and writing and stuff, their scripture and prayer are such good guardrails for me to keep me coming back to the word, being nourished by it, remembering that I don't need to earn my love today. Mm-hmm. The Lord has already secured my love, so I can go out and love through my work and all that stuff. And helping me pause to pray through the day. Those are just, there's nothing new about them. Mm-hmm. Like, they're the classical spiritual disciplines, but recast for a modern technological moment in a way that really just sustains me. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful for them.
Man, I love that. And I mean, it is simple, but there is something about like those long-term practices. Actually, what I love most so far about our conversation is that you're an Enneagram 4. What I mean by that is I really did think coming into this, I'm like, this is my like sicko head. I'm like, Justin's probably like a 1 on the Enneagram, and that's why habits are easy for him.
Yes.
But actually, like, and I tell my clients this all the time, like, I talk about feelings and connection and vulnerability because it's very hard for me. I don't talk about it because it's easy for me. And so you're like, so you're like not a guy who does this naturally. So this is kind of good news for all of us who were thinking, because I do think there are some people who are, I mean, my husband is a habit machine. Mm-hmm. That is his wiring. So he will follow, if he had like a hot trail of the way that he does his morning, it would be, I bet you his feet land in the same place at the same time. Virtually within like 30 seconds every single minute. I am so far from that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a structured person in that way at all.
Right.
So this is good news, whether habits come to you naturally or not. Those kind of guardrails and structures, we all need them. And maybe more so, those of us
and
who
I'm
are
no
not.
Expert in the Enneagram, but I think one of the things I have learned about being a four is one of the signs of health is that you move towards a little bit of oneness.
Yeah.
Where there is and can be structure in the world, and that's not suffocating.
Yeah.
And I'm just totally sold on it now. Like, because I am pretty buck wild in my heart otherwise. So like, and I started to notice in my late 20s that doing whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted it, was pretty dangerous. Mm-hmm. And like, my heart was kind of like a wild horse, and it was always like scattering off into the, and so getting like reins on it and blinders on it started to help me realize that there's a path where your heart can run fully, but safely.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of why I cling to these now as like guardrails. Like, I always use that metaphor because you can drive really fast when you have good guardrails.
Yeah.
That's always what I've wanted to do.
Yeah, that's so good. Yeah. Okay, so Common Rule is a great book for that, but I really do want to talk about your next book, this book that just more recently has come out. And tell us a little bit about like kind of the story behind this. You mentioned it briefly about your wild house.
Yeah.
But you've got this book that really helps us, no matter who we are as adults, kind of engage with this concept of habit for transformation. But then you wrote Habits of the Household. So tell me more.
So you're going to start to realize that all my books come out of crisis so far. I'm 2 for 2.
Actually, that's a really good way to write a book, I think.
It works. It's at least how I do it. So what I had written this book that we just talked about, and I'm always thinking about habits and stuff. Then I'm in my bedtime routine one night with my boys. There were 3 at the time. There are 4 now. There are 3 at this moment of this story. And it was just a night like the rest of our nights where there's bath water all over the floor, board books are weapons. Toothbrushes are fought over, naked wrestling matches. I mean, everything. And I end up getting just so frustrated that like I'm yelling and like, you know, forcibly moving the boys into PJs in bed, which is not unusual. And I end by telling them, you know, I love you, saying a short prayer. And then, you know, quiet down and leave. And I like closed the door and just had this moment in the hallway where I realized that this was normal. That was the extent of my epiphany. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just that this is typical. I end up moving them through anger throughout the house. And I think it's so it's healthy for anybody to have this moment, even though it's humbling. Like, what is your normal mm-hmm. in your house? What is it like to live with you? Mm-hmm. And it just started to occur to me, like, what it's like for them to live with me is to experience a lot of shouting and anger. Mm-hmm. And I just felt pretty awful about it. I was like, why is this happening? Or why am I responding to them like this over and over? And I was sharing this with one of my pastors who recommended that I try a bedtime liturgy with my boys. Now, this started to ring a bell because I've like been applying, you know, habits as liturgies to all of this technology and work life sure. and everything. But it was a bit of a wake-up moment. It's like I hadn't really, really thought about the liturgies of the household, the mm-hmm. habits of the household, mm-hmm. the way that I had my habits of work, my habits of technology. And so I wrote my first bedtime liturgy for the boys as an effort to try to think about this.
Okay.
And it was loosely based on the one my pastor did. And in short, it went like this. I would say, can you see my eyes? Mm-hmm. And they would say, yes. Then I'd say, can you see that I see your eyes? And they say, yes. And then I say, do you know that I love you? They say, yes. Then I say, do you know that I love you no matter what bad things you do? Yes. Do you know that I love you no matter what good things you do? Yes. And then we end with, who else loves you like that? And they say, God does.
Okay.
And despite how special those words might sound, you can imagine this is not like a beautiful thing with my kids the first night. The eye contact thing was like, I can see your eyes. Let me poke them. Or like, they don't know the answers to the questions that I want them to give. I'm like, who else loves you like that? They're like, grandma, you know, who they actually call Granny Max. All these weird things. But I did know enough about habits at that point to know that nothing is normal until it is. So you just got to persevere. And so we did this a couple nights running. And then I had the next important moment, which was maybe a week and a half later, where one of my boys lying in bed was like, can we have our nighttime blessing now?
Oh.
And he actually asked for it and they participate in it. Now, everything else about that second night was just like the first one. It's still like bathwater on the floor, still board books flying, all this stuff. But what was changed was not their behavior. What was changed was my reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized it was because I was now moving towards a different moment. I wasn't moving towards, by habit, I wasn't moving towards the moment of the goal of tonight is to shut the door.
Mm-hmm.
I was moving towards the moment of the goal of the night is to have this exchange about the love of God for us, which reminds us that no matter how they did or how I did, mm-hmm. no matter what good or bad things we do, he loves us.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just like, I was so happy that night.
Yeah.
Because I just started to have this like opening of my mind of like, oh, the habits of the household don't have to be the way they are now.
Mm.
Grace is real. We can change. There could hooks,
yeah.
if you will, that you can place in your routine that like take you back from the edge and say, no, let's go this way.
Yeah.
And I think that's the power of a good household habit. Mm-hmm. It changes the parents' knee-jerk reaction to these ordinary situations mm-hmm. and opens up these new avenues of grace mm-hmm. right in the midst of your ordinary life.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking about them everywhere.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love that story. I love that idea of liturgy, that repeating. I think some of the people listening or watching, you may realize if you think about it that you already have something like that
ding,
you
ding,
do.
Ding. This is the important mm-hmm. realization.
Yeah, is that instead of this is and this is always my concern. This is like the main thing in the interview I want to talk about is people who go into a shame spiral that are like, I've failed my family, I've failed my children
because right.
I'm not doing
yeah.
this. Or, well, I've tried that before. And one of the things, one of your habits is family devotions. My family is notoriously bad
yeah.
at family. And actually, I realized one of the things you mentioned in there is like, make sure that you can like do something, like be across a meal or do mm-hmm. something yeah. with your hands or whatever, because the only time we're at an empty table is an interview or interrogation is our line from
yeah,
the book,
yeah.
which I was like, brilliant. That's exactly right. We create these forced, weird scenarios with our family where no one feels like they're being normal and
right.
feels super artificial. And we, like I said, we've failed. So kind of two questions I want to ask is, one, what do you say to the person who's just trying to get started? But before that, let's address the part where someone already feels like they've failed because they're not doing these things or they've tried and they feel shame because they're like,
yeah,
I must like suck at being a mom. Like I can't make this stuff happen in my house.
Yeah. Well, that person is just like me. So I'm really comfortable talking to that person because as you know, I've shared, like a lot of my deepest failure has led to this whole topic in the first place, mm-hmm. right? I was a person who was drinking in order to fall asleep because I was so anxious mm-hmm. and having suicidal thoughts. I mean, mm-hmm. that was embarrassing for the former missionary. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea now that actually your failures are like the fertile soil of mm-hmm. where God remakes your heart is, mm-hmm. it is painful mm-hmm. to be gardened, mm-hmm. But we have a good gardener. And so the first thing that I think of there is just that your failures aren't a sign that things are going wrong. Okay. They might be a sign that God is working. Mm-hmm. And you should lean into your failures, mm-hmm. not try to hide them. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what I think about now is just this idea that our habits will not change God's love for us. Mm-hmm. But God's love for us can and should, really must, change our habits. So we're not trying to do this stuff so that we can stop feeling like a failure. We're trying to do this stuff because God took on all our failures mm-hmm. and he made it possible to actually change. So it's because of the love of God, because change is actually possible mm-hmm. that we do any of this in the first place, which maybe ends up in a short way of saying it, don't be discouraged, keep trying. Like God is with you. Yeah, you know, there's a lot to come. Mm. And then I forgot the second part of your
question. Okay, so my second part is where would you, so I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. Let's just use me as an example. This will be perfect because we cover the whole range of ages of family. Yeah. So one of the things that you talk about in your book, actually in both of your books, is a relationship with technology. Mm-hmm. And I love that you had I think you recently had a social media post like how to break up with your phone maybe you didn't say break up.
How to use your phone less, I think was something
develop a healthy relationship with your phone or whatever. And it was awesome. And you guys can go check it out. But what do you do when your whole house, like you've got a, this happens to me a lot in, mm-hmm. in working with a lot of women. A lot of women will come to me and they will want to change something in the family, but they feel resistance. So whether their partner
doesn't want to do it,
or their kids give them, you know, a lot of backlash. So let's use the phone. So I feel a certain way about the phone. I tell everyone how I feel about the phone. How do you recommend, like, where would you start when someone feels like, maybe my partner's not on board or, you know.
I want to answer that question humbly because I will say I've always had the gift of Lauren. Well, period. Lauren is a gift. I love, you know, she's my favorite.
You were just saying, yeah. Period to the gift. I've always had the gift.
No. I have the gift of Lauren.
Of Lauren.
Lauren the is gift wonderful. Of Lauren. My wife, Lauren.
Okay, awesome. And my husband, Dave, is also wonderful. And yeah. I think that's important when we feel like we've got support and respect.
Yes.
So it's different.
And I think a big part of the gift is Lauren has... It's just, we've sort of seen eye to eye on this. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh, this, you know, we do want to be parenting intentionally. We do want to be living intentionally. Mm-hmm. But I do have a lot of people ask, like, well, what do you do if the spouse is not on board? And it's a hard question.
Yeah.
Like, I have a lot of sympathy for that question because one of the big things I talk about in both books is that people change the most when they change communally and that you have somebody doing it with you.
Okay.
So my strong encouragement would be whether you're talking about a personal habit of like scripture before phone mm-hmm. or a better prayer life, or whether you're talking about your nightly routine with your kids or your mm-hmm. mealtime routine, all of those need community. And so one place to start would be finding, like, and I'm just doing this afresh right now with my two best friends.
Okay.
We're sharing the habits that we're trying to commit to this year.
Okay.
Because we try to avoid the New Year's resolution stuff and talk about New Year's habits. Okay. Because that whole theory on why that's better. But the point is, you know, we're talking about, okay, well, what are you trying to do with your kids, with your wife? And so that sort of accountability is an absolutely essential ingredient to any habit endeavor. Mm-hmm. Now, ideally, that's also your spouse.
Right.
But if not, if you're in a really different place than your spouse, I would say you have my sympathy because that is tough.
Yeah.
But I also want to encourage you. Your spouse is not going to be disappointed in the long run that you are trying to live intentionally. Mm-hmm. So I would say do it humbly, you know, beware that, you know, if you're like, well, honey, somebody should be leading family devotions, you know, it's like, well, shame, you know, and guilt never really changed anybody. But, you know, I would just encourage you to be faithful to like you demonstrate what you think the household should be doing. And even if you're doing it and, you know, your spouse doesn't want in on it, that is still a faithful act, and mm-hmm. it's still an act of love to your kids, and it's an act of witness to your spouse.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But it is hard, and you have my sympathy.
Yeah,
you know, for any listener.
It definitely is. I think what I found some, and this is true for my life with Dave, with the kids, is that a lot of times with the right spirit and time, like not trying to force everything at once, but the right spirit and time, people are more open to doing and being and having compromise than we might first think.
Right.
We can quickly get on our guard or defensive or whatever, get in our head about what we want it to be or what it isn't or whatever. And generally, with a humble spirit over time, and if it's you're modeling it, like, I'm a more peaceful person because I don't have my phone at whatever times,
that's right.
Then that's also attractive. Now, that doesn't mean it's always going to work, but it that is a longer, maybe like a longer view of something. Yes. Like, I don't want someone to not read your book because they're like, well, my spouse isn't a believer or they're not on board or whatever. It's like, no, there's ways and little pieces that you can take on.
Yeah.
You know?
And that I think that's put really well, because there's no guarantee you're going to change your kids or your spouse through any of this.
Right.
Right. But so the goal is not that kind of success, but that faithfulness to doing it will bear fruit somewhere. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what the theory that I kind of apply in Habits of the Household is that we become our habits and our kids become us.
Mm.
So the habits of our household matter to our children's formation. And the implication of that is that probably the most important thing you're doing in your child's spiritual formation is not that one thing you said or required or, you know, or mentioned. It's just the witness of your life over time, which is why, like, a lot of the book is about pay attention to how you live in front of them, the little things, which is basically just what you're saying. Like, the biggest way to change your spouse is just to live quietly and faithfully in front of them.
Yep.
There are important things to say, and you will have those important moments, but a bunch of your witness is just, what does your life look like?
Yeah.
And so I think the same theory is kind of applicable here. Like, live humbly in front of them, and likely the Lord will bear fruit.
Mm, so good. Okay, so kind of last question on the book. What's kind of your favorite liturgy that, or your favorite habit that came out of this practice? Were you doing all of them? Or when you went to write the book, were you like, okay, I want to make sure I'm covering kind of all these areas of life?
Yeah, some of them developed while I was writing the book. A lot of them were just taken from the laboratory of our own household after time. That's so hard. I'm going to cheat and name a couple.
Maybe right now. I'll add right now at the end. Like, which ones are you sort of like most into right now?
One, I got really into writing the discipline chapter because I think discipline for parents of young children is such a new ground of learning. And it's so ripe for failure. You feel a lot of shame in the way you discipline. And I just love, we still do this habit of the brother's hug, which is just an act of reconciliation after we have a fight. I was doing it last night with my little two. And it's just the theory applied is that we should have some embodied way to act out reconciliation. So we don't have the I'm sorry, I forgive you, like go opposite. And nobody's reconciled. And so we just have this thing where you have to hold onto a hug until people smile. I only subsequently found out that holding onto a hug for longer than 10 seconds actually releases all these chemicals in your brain, and physiologically, hugs change you.
Oh, really?
I didn't know this. Did you know that?
No, okay, I did not know. I love this stuff.
Recent knowledge.
Okay, because I actually made my kids, before you wrote your book, back in the little kid days, I required hugs for reconciliation, so.
Yeah, and so it's been big. Now, some people have told me, you know, be careful. You shouldn't command your kids to hug if they really don't want to hug. That's fair.
Well, like, but if they really don't want to hug, they're not reconciled.
Yeah. So
you might need a longer process.
There you go. So the idea is just like, do you have some active reconciliation? That's just like a dear habit to us because it really helps. Like, families are going to fight.
Yeah.
Surprise. Spouses are going to fight. Brothers are going to fight. Sisters are going to fight. Families fight. If we don't have some liturgy of reconciliation, then we sort of are guaranteed bitterness and absence.
Yeah.
You know? So that's a really fun one. Now, I said I was going to cheat because also I just love thinking about habits of screen time.
Okay.
And so that was one of my other favorite chapters because I just think it's so essential.
Yeah.
Every family's habits of screen time are going to be really different.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that we need to raise children who, when they leave the house, know how to use screens wisely, like with integrity,
right,
with honor, is I just can't imagine anything more essential
for
right now.
Yeah.
So those things were also, I probably debate between discipline and screen time. Those are the two chapters I had the most fun with, I think.
I to brag on my own kids for a
brief
second. One of my proudest recent parenting moments is when one of my children deleted an app off of their phone on their own.
Independently?
Yeah, and just said, this isn't good for me right now. And I'm like, okay, we've done it. Yikes. And we didn't, you know, it wasn't always right, it wasn't always good, but that process of, that's a child who's almost leaving the home. So you do need a child who's almost leaving the home to be able to know when something's good or not good for them, as opposed to just giving them rules that they are either breaking or not breaking. Yes. And that's where I was like, okay, we've done something right.
That's awesome. Yeah, I know. I love that. I look forward to those moments.
Like, yeah. Then rather than like prohibitive or like kind of legalistic, it was more like, no, that's actually what you want. You need to have a healthy relationship. And that's going to look different for you than it is for you. There's some things I think you'll find, I'm sure they're in your book, and they're certainly, you and I agree, there's some things that are non-negotiable. I know you talk a lot about an hour time with your phone off and how, you know, a phone on the table, you guys will notice if you're watching that we don't have our phones on the table, actually makes people feel already less listened to.
Right.
Even if it's face down, people feel like, oh, I guess there must be something more important than me, right? So even those little habits, little changes that we can all make matter. But like you said, everyone's screen time looks a little different.
And that's like the goal. That's a beautiful story. I only hope like my sons get to making those same decisions. And that is the whole goal.
Yeah.
It's the idea that, yes, I set rules for them now. Which, by the way, that's the parent's job, right? I mean, especially in the younger years. My dad always put it, and he didn't tell me this until I was an adult, but I actually liked this metaphor. If you fish, you know that you have to set the hook and then reel in the fish. Mm-hmm. And you have to kind of let out the drag as you go. Otherwise, a fish will break the line. So this, that idea that you need firmness in authority in a different way early on, where you need leniency and make your own decisions, swim that way or this way. The goal I think of is that, you know, I require my children to wear pants when we leave the house. I assume that they will grow up to be people who decide for themselves, I'm going to put on pants today.
Yes.
I require them now to have screen time off and like stop eating chocolate syrup now.
Sure.
Because I assume and hope and pray that, you know, as they grow older and leave the house, they'll be like, yeah, now's a good time to put my phone away. Or now's a good time to stop eating ice cream. Just to teach them those rules early so that they become rhythms later. And rhythms are so much more powerful than rules when you really start to live.
So good. Oh man, what a great, this is gives us so many things to think about. If you, like, let's just give somebody a freebie who's like, all right, I'm parenting young kids, I'm dying, it's COVID, like whatever. Like what's one, like what would you, if you wanted to just give them, they can go like check you out on Instagram, you've got some really, really great like places to start, but what's like one thing you wanna give our listeners today is like, what would you start with if you could just change one thing today, start a habit today?
I think if somebody was going to change one thing and start one habit today, it should be scripture before phone.
Okay.
That's by far the most powerful one little habit, even in my household. Because as a parent, like one of the most important things is that I am living the way that I want them to live. And not only is that setting an example, but it's also setting me up to parent well. Mm-hmm. And I really think that that's just been, for me and for so many other people, a game changer.
Yeah.
So many people want to get into the Word every day. So few actually do.
True.
So few of us want to start our days in the phone. So many of us do.
Yep.
And that little habit in accountability really flips the script on modern life in a way that honestly is like revolutionary to many people.
So good.
So I would say that one.
Awesome. Really good. Yeah. Okay. This is my last question that I ask everyone who comes on the show. Really just we're taking a sharp left turn. We went deep and now we're going to come way up. What is like one product, app, thing that is changing your life right now that you're just like, this is a small thing and I love it. I'm obsessed with it.
I love that question. I got a pair of boots for Christmas.
When you went like this, I thought it was going to be tweezers. But
no, because I was trying to think, what's the brand? I can't think of the brand.
Okay.
But they're like rubber boots, and here's what's the game changer. They don't lace up.
Okay.
They have this little like nub on the back, so you can just put your foot on it and slip them on and off.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, they're warm, they're waterproof, and I don't have to lace them. This is like a huge game changer for me. I always hate shoes because I have to spend all this time like down on the ground like lacing them up. which, like, for four kids is awful because you're lacing all their shoes up,
too. Oh, my gosh. That's why you hate lacing shoes right now. Right then, yeah, I was like, this is so weird, but I hated
it. It's so
lacing kids'
time,
shoes.
Like,
they're wiggling around.
Yeah, and they're like,
moving
kicking.
Their feet.
Like, please stop kicking while I do this for you. And so it just gives me great pleasure that this great pair of boots, and it's been a cold, like, past 2 weeks. Yeah. I just slip them right on and right off, and I'm like, small
I'm
things
on my way.
The small things.
Thank you, Justin, for that.
Maybe I can give you the brand of the boots and you put them in the show
we
notes.
We will. No, yeah. We'll put them in the show. Yeah. You will give me the brand. I will put them in the show notes. Yeah. Somebody out there actually really cares about that.
Yeah,
and that's what I like about
like,
this
I need
question.
Those. Yeah. I know. And they were given to me as a gift, so I have no idea how much they cost.
Okay. He's like, don't put me on preachers and sneakers. I don't know. Maybe they were super expensive. All right. Well, Justin, thanks so much for coming on Let's Be Real. You have kept it real for us today, and I am just... So, I mean, I already told you when I read the advanced copy, I have like given this to so many parents. Like, I wish I had had it when I was parenting young kids. It doesn't matter if your kids are young or old, it applies, but it's so great to just land in a space that says, oh, yes, I can bring intentionality and love to my family in like really accessible ways. So thank you for writing it.
You're welcome. And thanks for the great questions. This is like a testimony to being in person. This is so much more fun than some of the podcasts I've done on Zoom where I can't see them, their transactions.
It's
you, but also you in the room.
All right, you guys, thanks for being with us. We'll talk to you next time.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Let's Be Real podcast. If you have a question for the show, you can send it to me at Nicole@NicoleEunice.com. And hey, if you're enjoying this, we'd love for you to like, subscribe, share it with your friends, pass it on, shout it from the rooftops, whatever you feel like doing, because the reality is, let's get as many people getting real as possible. Talk to you soon.